Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Attention pot consultants, attention salvia consultants, attention leftists, rightists, centrists. It's time to cool the rhetoric. We're going to have a mild show today. I wouldn't exactly say I'm going to go to Doctor on Savage quite yet, but I want to talk about dead crickets for a minute. First, we had dead birds falling from the sky, then thousands and thousands of fish washing up on rivers. And now we learn that crickets are dying. A virus has killed millions of crickets. And I often wonder now, who do you blame? Now, of course, the left will blame the right for polluting the air or something and killing the birds and the fish and the crickets. I guess the right wing could blame the death of the crickets on an expansion of big government and say that had the government not been expanded so rapidly, the birds and then the fish and then the crickets wouldn't have died in the millions. I guess the centrists could say we don't know who did it, but we know it's evil and it should be fixed right away. I guess the Department of Homeland Security could create a new committee to study the death of millions of crickets and see if there's some way they can arrest homeowners for some reason to do with the death of the crickets. I suppose the FBI can investigate the death of the crickets and see if it's tied to any political rhetoric. And then I suppose an aging sea lion on MSNBC who has lost his tusks can blame it on Michael Savage. But in either case, there's a lot of blame to go around. And perhaps the biggest loser in this entire tragedy of Arizona is Hillary Clinton herself. Here is a woman who's our Secretary of State, who was in the Middle East, who has not yet apologized for a malicious and inaccurate statement that she made when she said that a member of our Congress was just shot by an extremist in our country. Can you believe that the Secretary of State would say a thing like that? She then compared the Arizona madman, Jared Loughner, as an American extremist of a sort with the 9/11 hijackers. She then went on to CNN, America's worst network, and here's what Hillary Clinton said. When you cross the line from expressing opinion to violent action, that is a hallmark of extremism, whether it comes from the right, the left, from Al-Qaeda, from anarchists, whoever it is. So now she's comparing a maniac with a gun to a global network inspired by Islamo-fascist religious nihilists. It is frightening to believe that America's top diplomat could actually believe what she said yesterday. But she's not alone in this. Many of the deranged left are still hammering the same story, even though it's turned out that the man was not political. Even though it's turned out that his friend said he disliked the news, he didn't listen to political radio, he didn't take sides, he wasn't on the left, he wasn't on the right. The fact is that Jared Loughner was not a political extremist. And for Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to say otherwise means that she herself is either lying or she's deluded, but in either case she owes this country an apology. This is the Savage Nation. Let's go to the next story that caught my attention. Or shall I say the same story? I picked up a hard copy, actually a newspaper copy of the New York Post, even though I don't live in New York. I actually got tired of the internet, and I missed the smell of ink on my fingers. I missed the slight allergic reaction that I used to get from the black fingers, and the actual smell of newsprint. After all, I grew up on newspapers, and I picked up the paper, and I enjoyed the salaciousness and the swimsuit ads and the bodies and the this mixed in with the news. It's kind of a Victorian newspaper in that regard. I like it very much. And I saw a cartoon that I have to share with you today. Two guys with guns in their hands, baggy pants, smoking cigarettes. They're wearing masks over their faces. One has a nose ring. And there's a dead man in the street with spent cartridges around him. They're wearing kind of, you know, kind of street gang clothing. And the man who's lying shot on the street is a businessman by the clothing the cartoonist drew on him. And his briefcase is splayed on the sidewalk. And they're picking his pocket for money. And one of them in the cartoon bubble is seen saying, "If we get caught, just blame Palin and talk radio." I'm going to frame this cartoon because it defines exactly what's gone on in this country to this day. And speaking of thieves in the night, I want to now focus on one of the greatest scandals in American history. This gang is perhaps the most dangerous gang in America. There are no laws to control them. They are indigenous to the nation. They are not immigrants. They are not of a particular color, nor of a particular religion. But they are acting in a far more dangerous manner and have caused more financial harm to this country and continue to do so than Al-Qaeda has. And that is the tort lawyers in this country. I have an ad in my hand that any sane nation would immediately have a congressional hearing and stop these thieves as fast as they can. Listen to this ad. The Zagrota bill, the Zadroga bill passed. That's the James Zadroga 9/11 Health and Compensation Act of 2010. Call Warby, Groner, Edelman, and Napoli Byrne LLP now to evaluate your claim. Now, I'm not focusing on these wonderful lawyers. I'm focusing on the entire category of tort law. Now, listen to what they say. If you were in Lower Manhattan and injured as a result of the World Trade Center attacks, contact us now to discuss your rights. Now, listen to what they're saying. Firefighters, police officers, emergency service, federal and city employees, volunteers, construction and cleanup workers. You hear? You may be entitled to compensation for your injuries, wage losses, and medical bills. Here's a question I have for you. Isn't a firefighter paid to save people after a disaster? Isn't a police officer paid for his dangerous work? Isn't an emergency service worker paid to go into dangerous situations and emergencies? Aren't city employees paid to do these things? Why in the world are we paying them extra money for 9/11? This firm, Warby, Groner, Edelman, Napoli, and Byrne, are not the only lawyers cashing in on this 9/11 disaster. There are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of such lawyers who are no better than the criminals who are holding up people in the street, in my humble opinion. It is time to pass tort reform in the United States of America. I don't expect you to respond to it because I know what you want to talk about. You want to talk about the Tucson massacre. You want to talk about China. You want to talk about Obama. You want to talk about all of these topics, and we will do so on the Savage Nation. I want to remind you the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I must tell you that last night I watched the memorial. I'm pleased to report that the president did a very good job. He towed the line. He didn't get political. He kept it very balanced. He knew that the world would be watching for him to make it into a political event. I was offended by the cheering when it started. I was offended by the smirking and smiling by the First Lady and the president when they stood there to the cheers. I thought there was something inappropriate about it. But what most disturbed me was the opening speech by the Pascua Yaqui tribal leader, Dr. Carlos Gonzalez, who opened the Tucson Memorial Service. I have never heard a more amateur, inappropriate memorial speech in my life. Listen to this now.
Welcome. Let me start in the traditional way by introducing myself. I am Carlos Gonzalez. On my mother's side, I am Mexican. A child of descendants of this valley, pioneer family.
Now let's stop right here. Listen to this. They choose this doctor from the university to give the opening speech. And right away, because he just said he's descended from a Mexican mother, God bless him, this idiotic, dumb audience breaks into applause at a memorial service of people shot by a madman. But it gets uglier. Listen.
Other side, I'm Yaqui. refugees from Mexico that escaped the genocide in the Rio Yaqui in the 1800s. We have been here. For myself, I am fifth generation in the Valley of Tucson.
But what does this have to do with a memorial for people shot by a madman, doctor? Nothing. Nothing. Liberalism is a mental disorder.
Please understand, I am not a medicine man.
Well, thank
God. I'm just a family doc.
Great.
Fortunate enough to teach here at this university.
You're not kidding, fortunate enough to teach at this college, because I don't think you could teach anywhere else.
So that I can share them with you.
All right, it's enough already. I don't have to spend the whole show. You get the drift, okay? Here is a memorial for six victims of the Tucson shooting, and they take this amateur hour, Dr. Carlos Gonzalez, and he gives a speech about himself as a Mexican, a child of a pioneer family, a refugee, he's a family doctor. It's unbelievable. It couldn't get lower than this in terms of idiocy, but it did. We then saw the remarkable, it wasn't quite as comedic, in the sense of being embarrassing, but it was shocking, for Janet Napolitano to quote from the Old Testament book of Isaiah. You got to listen to this one.
Comfort, yes, comfort my people, says your God. Speak comfort to Jerusalem and cry out to her that her warfare is ended, that her iniquity is pardoned.
We're coming back from the alley,
from the
you
Lord's
know.
Hand
We're on our way back from the lanes.
And, the voice of one crying in the wilderness.
One of the girls said, you know, why don't you bring out the Bible here? Them
make
crackers will like it.
In the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be exalted and every mountain.
All right, let's stop right here. She reminds me of all the teachers who would read the Bible in public school and you'd go to sleep or throw spitballs at each other because you knew the teacher herself, A, never read the Bible, B, didn't believe a word of the Bible, and C, didn't know who she was reading it for. Is there more of Napolitano?
The glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together.
Well, wait a minute. The Lord should be revealed. If he went through the TSA screening, believe me, he'd be revealed. I can guarantee you. If Janet Napolitano saw the Lord, she strip search him. I can guarantee you. Play that again. You talk about an irony here. Listen to this.
The glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together, for the mouth of the Lord.
I'm sorry. Come on. How shall he be revealed, Janet? I mean, shall he be revealed through the X-ray scanner or through the frisk job? Oh, yeah. And then we have the strange case last night of Attorney General Eric Holder, America's the worst Attorney General in American history by any let's say fair-minded analysis. Eric Holder has to be the worst Attorney General in American history. Listen to this in clip 9.
Like Janet, I will read words far beyond any that I might employ. A reading from the second letter of Paul to the Corinthians. Since we have the same spirit of faith as he had who wrote, I believed, and so I spoke. We too believe, and so we speak, knowing that he who raised the Lord Jesus will raise us also with Jesus.
All right, let's stop right here. Now, I want to ask you something. Didn't we get lectured to death about the separation of church and state? Why is it appropriate for Janet Napolitano to read from Isaiah and Attorney General Holder to read from 2 Corinthians and talk about Jesus? Is anyone following what I'm saying to you? It gets even more weird. I mean, these are the same people who are forcing people to take down the Ten Commandments, saying that there should be a separation of church and state. These are people forcing military people to take down flags in condominiums. This is a Justice Department that is forcing people to snap crosses off war memorials. And then we get to the strangest of all in clip 14. Listen to this.
Scripture tells us there is a river whose streams make glad the city of God. The holy
place Australia,
where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fall. God will help her at break of day.
Wait a minute, God. Notice how they've changed him to her. Have you noticed something else that went on here? Did you notice Napolitano changed Jerusalem to her and Obama changed it to her in the fashion of the weak-minded liberal? I'll be right back.
Savage. We'll be right back.
The glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together, for the mouth of the Lord...
Can you believe this? I mean, if this is not a Freudian slip selection of the Bible by Secretary Napolitano, the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. I mean, you talk about irony. This is the woman who's in charge of the strip searches and the machines at the airports. Look what she selects to read. The glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. I mean, it's not a big deal. I'm trying to lighten the mood here in America, okay? You know, mild barbs of this nature are healthy for a society. Maybe these should be outlawed, too. Maybe this could be considered cruel and inhumane speech by somebody in the idiotic government. Oh, I said idiotic government. In the brilliant government, sorry. Police find black bag carried by Arizona killer. The 22-year-old apparently ran into the desert from his angry father, was chasing his son after seeing him remove a black bag from the trunk of a family car. No doubt they will find in the black bag books by various conservative talk show hosts, links to websites that the government doesn't approve of, and say, see, we told you. I mean, they can do anything right now. They can make it up what's in the bag. And so what if what's in the bag? So what? What if we'll burn books next? And then you'll get the aging sea lion on MSNBC, the aging sea lion who lost his tusks a long time ago, getting up and saying, see, I told you so. Anyway, I think we've covered this. Here we have Robert Gates, our defense secretary at the Great Wall of China. It's almost frightening. He's the most terrifyingly incompetent secretary of the army. He's the most incompetent in his position in American history. We're losing the military's strategic advantage on every front. And he's obsessed only with the left wing's social engineering concerns. Women on submarines, gays in the military. We're losing our edge in the air, on the seas, and on land. And there's Gates over in China kowtowing to the Chinese.
Savage.
The voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God. Every valley shall be exalted,
right,
and every
right, look,
mountain...
Look, what do you expect them to do? It was a terrible situation. You know, what they wanted to avoid politics, let's be clear. You got to give them credit for that. And you got to ask yourself, it's easy to stand there on the sidelines and ridicule government officials. It's the worst job in the world. To begin with, it's the worst job in the world. I don't know. I really don't know why anyone wants it other than they can't make it in the business world or whatever. I mean, why do they go into this business for if it's so hard? If you really believe in public service, it's one thing. I don't know how many of them do. I know a few that I know I believe in. Alan West, Congressman Florida. There's a man who believes in it. I met another great congressman from Texas. Congressman from Texas is a great guy. Culberson, great man, wonderful men, good men. They're as good as gold. But, you know, when you hear, I mean, what are they supposed to do? You know, you can't ridicule them. You know, the salvia issue is a big deal, and it didn't pick up. The media didn't get it. Not even my friends in the media picked up on it. Zach Osler, the friend of the loser who did the shooting, said that he saw a change in Loeffner after a former girlfriend broke up with him. Loeffner began abusing alcohol and drugs, including the hallucinogen salvia. Did you hear this? Osler says he would say he was using salvia and would talk about it and what it would do to him. Is this about his girlfriend Sylvia or salvia? I don't know if I had somebody may have transcribed this wrong. Because I knew it was Sylvia who was slightly hallucinogenic. Well, I would say she was an hysteric, not hallucinogenic. But it's an interesting play on words when you think about it. Salvia is a tough word for people to get a grip on, so they say Sylvia or saliva. And that's why most in the media didn't even cover salvia, because they didn't know whether it was saliva or Sylvia or salvia. But that's what screwed them up. There's no question about it. I spent 2 hours on it yesterday in the Savage Nation. Sarah Palin did a great speech. I have no respect for her. But why play it again? She's being condemned for giving a great speech. And you know what? This will drop into the background, fortunately or unfortunately. The dead will never rise from the grave. You know, Fort Hood, 13 people killed by Major Hassan, about 30 wounded. Oh, there was a memorial service, but it was not, let us say, played to the extent that this was. You mean the soldiers' lives, I guess, didn't have as much meaning? I don't know. Couldn't have been used for as much political momentum by the left because the shooter was a Muslim. He infiltrated the military. He had not been stopped by any of the higher-ups in the military. The secretary of the army should have been fired. There were many, many other top brass who should have been fired because of the Fort Hood massacre. And we've never seen a discussion of it to this day to the extent that it deserved. Have we seen a full congressional hearing on how Major Hassan, although he was signing his medical reports with Allah be praised, how he was not thrown out of the military? Have we seen the generals fired? No. And you're never going to see them fired. And so I realize that certain, you know, in animal farms, certain animals are more equal than others. And that's why this is the most difficult business on Earth Talk Radio. I have compassion for public officials, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent. It's a tough job. Every word must be measured. Every statement must be thought about. They have to rehearse them. They have to run them through focus groups. I don't do that. The only focus group I have really is myself. I don't talk about my show much. Maybe before the show, a few minutes before, I talk to the guys and I say, well, you know what? I'm going to talk about the crickets and lead into the show. That's about it. Ask them if I work any other way. I don't have anyone I run this by. What you're hearing is what one man in this nation thinks, me, Michael Savage. It's one man's opinion. I'm not saying it's the gospel, but it's my gospel. It's my thinking on this issue or any other issue that I may expound upon. And so as I say, listen to what I'm saying, what I'm getting at. I'm talking about a national situation that's extremely volatile even to the second, right? And I'm trying to lighten the mood by talking about how the speeches were given, and I thought they were like inappropriate in the case of that doctor they got up there talking about the Yaquis and the Mexicans and the cheering. I thought that Obama and Michelle smiling at the beginning, totally inappropriate, not presidential. They looked like goofy high school kids who were getting an award. They didn't even know where they were until someone must have given something in the ear like, stop smiling. They just stopped smiling immediately. Not a big crime, okay? On a magnitude of 1 to 1,000, it's a 1. I'm not putting it in the context of an out-of-control situation. But again, I'm talking about a national situation in my own way. It's called a conversation, what I am doing. And that's the beauty of talk radio. If I have to defend the medium, I guess I will do so because I can do it quite eloquently. What does the word conversation mean? It means with verse. Conversation. Do you get it? Conversation. Get it? With verse. We go back and forth with verse. Now, we've lost the age of verse. There's no poetry anymore. Poetry is dead, as we well know. When you have a illiterates who can't even write their name suddenly, they call themselves poets now, and there's nothing, there's no rhyme, there's no reason to anything they say, but all right, that's another story, is the debasement of Western civilization. But we try our best. And what is the purpose of conversation? The Chinese-American writer Lin Yutang wrote that the purpose of conversation, at least with friends, is to keep the conversation going. You know, do you ever think about that? When you have friends over in your living room, if they still call it a living room, I do. No matter what house I'm in, I call it a living room. I don't know why do they call it now? Something else, Beowulf? I don't know what they call it. Does anyone know what they call it? No, it's not a living room. Everything's changed. But when I have friends over to my house in the living room, which is never, but let's say the few times in my life, in my adult life, I had friends over in a living room for a conversation, and we weren't watching a movie, and we're having a conversation. The object was to keep the conversation going. The object was not to beat your friend in a debate. The object was not to cut your friend off, cut him short, make him feel small, and make him turn red. The object was to keep the conversation flowing. And I want to tell you something else. That's a very good guideline for talk radio. And I'll tell you another little side note here. Let's say I come up with a controversial topic, as I do on a regular basis. That's my job, incidentally. It's my job category. Okay? That's my job category. Let's say you're a carpenter. Your job is to connect wood together with nails. Or a plumber. Your job is to put pipes together, however you put pipes together. Or you're an electrician. Your job is to make wires run so lights go on and TVs work, right? My job is to have a conversation with my audience, which numbers in the millions. It's not an easy job, but I excel at it. I'm great at it. I'm an astronaut of talk radio. and I can do it very well. Now, there's another couple of rules in talk radio I'll share with you. I don't even know why I'm telling you all this. It's not like I'm giving you secrets, but it's an interesting side note. In the early days of talk radio, I was led to believe that good talk radio consisted of visceral arguments between myself and those I disagreed with. And the call screeners would specialize in getting haters on the left who would call me up and try to insult me, and I'd insult them, and we'd wrap each other down, and I would always win. And then if I didn't win, I'd win the next shot, and then I'd cut them off. And that's the beauty of talk radio, is you do have the kill switch, so you always win. It's sort of like a casino in Las Vegas. The house always the house always wins in talk radio. You got to understand that. But it's no different than anything else on earth. That's the joy of this medium. The house always wins. So even if we start to fall behind, in the end we win because we got the kill switch. But it's rare that I fall behind. Okay, the point is a little different. I generally don't take haters on the show. I'll tell you what I discovered. About 6 months to a year into my career in talk radio, beginning in 1994, I found out that listeners don't really like loud argument. They don't like screaming put-downs. You know what they want? They want a reasonable discussion of what's going on, and they want to learn things, and they want to have a good time. That's about it. They don't really want to have crosstalk and yelling and screaming. And I'll tell you something else. A lot of the TV shows that used to specialize in panels, you'll notice I'm never on a panel discussion. Well, I'm never on TV to begin with. I've been blacklisted by every network and, of course, Fox News. But even when I went on TV, I would never go on a panel discussion. It's not because I'm not capable of an argument. I can beat most people in a street discussion. I always have been good at it since the first grade in the Bronx. Trust me. I'm very fast and very cutting when I want to be. I don't enjoy it, though. Secondly, you, the listener, don't like it. You don't want to hear A and B screaming at each other over a topic. You don't want to hear left and right and left and blah, 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 blah. You know what you want to hear? You want to hear what you're thinking. I'm going to use a French phrase because I've used it before. Mallarmé, the French poet, wrote, "Donnez plus clair le mot de la tribu." That's to show you how smart I am and to impress you with my Parisian French. And what it means is to make more clear the words of the tribe. That's a rough translation, meaning to clarify what you're thinking, but you can't express exactly the way you want to express it. I do that for you. And that's really the job of talk radio, to make more clear the words of the tribe. In other words, maybe you've been thinking what you feel, you're watching things you're feeling, you know something's wrong, but you don't know how to say it, you're busy with your life. You know what the job of a good talk show host is? To help you clarify your feelings and your thoughts. I forgot the French already. And speaking of the French, I was watching TV last night. I was burnt out after the show. So I went out for spaghetti, tutamari. I always leave out the hard shell. I don't want the clams, in case you want to know the inside. I don't like the clams, and I don't eat the mussels anymore because I don't know the origin. So I get the shrimp and the scallops. And a little calamari, even though most calamari today is toxic. It comes from China. I won't eat it anymore. The calamari where I live in California is from Monterey. If it's in Monterey, fine, but you don't know where it's from. Most of it's from polluted water, which unfortunately is true for a lot of seafood. But I go to a joint where I know where the scallops come from. They grow them in their own beds in the Newfoundland or whatever. That's what they say. Long and short of it, so I have a beer. I had one to Heineken, two Heineken, whatever. I shouldn't even give them a plug-ola. And a beer, and then I go home, and I get in bed, and I watch a movie. So I'm clicking around. I go on to the theme, and then I go on the theme movies, and I click down on movies. I stumbled on a winner last night. I stumbled on a two-hour winner. You know what it was called? You'll never believe it. Bob Le Flambeur. What's Bob Le Flambeur? This is an obscure movie that only a film buff would love. It's called Bob the Gambler, 1956-57. It's about a French gambler who's down on his luck, and he has to make one last score, and he's going to hold up the Deauville Casino. Now, the reason I love this movie is a couple of reasons. One, the street scenes of Paris in the mid-50s are beyond poetry. The cinematography, these are new 35mm prints. The photography, compared to the digital stuff we're getting today, is so gorgeous. The street scenes, the French faces, the cars of the period, the cafe scenes, the way the women comported themselves, the way they walked, even the way they twitched their behind, everything was perfect. The clothing that the men wore, even the suits, every man in the movie wore a suit. Do you know that in the mid-50s, a man would not go out of his house in a city without a suit? If he did, he was either a tradesman or, let's say, a worker of some kind. The suit, the tie, the shirt, it was an amazing thing to witness the degeneration of Western civilization from that period to a mere 15 years later after the hippies took over Western civilization in the universities and destroyed it. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Now, what does that mean? It means nothing. But I remember studying French grammar in college, and I simply try to learn lines to pick up girls when I would go to Europe. And I remember watching these movies about Paris and life and how incredibly gay it was in the sense of what gay meant in those days. It has a different connotation today. You know, free love, right? Everyone thought they'd go to France and there'd be free love. But remember what I'm talking about here. I'm going to get to a bigger point, I hope. I'm talking about some movies I watched from the mid-50s, right? Like Last Night. There was actually another one with Jean-Paul Belmondo right after, but my eyes already were already shot. I had to turn it off. But, you know, you watch Paris in the mid-50s, so I was talking about the street scenes and this and that. But it was true for America as well. If you watch American movies from the same period, you see an America that soon died as a result of Timothy Leary and Allen Ginsberg and William Kunstler. These three evil leftists destroyed America. Allen Ginsberg, William Kunstler, and Timothy Leary destroyed America. I defined it as such. In fact, I was going to write an essay on it one day. I haven't gotten around to it. The three who killed America. All of them were radical left-wing fanatics, drug addicts, sexual libertines in the worst possible connotation of that statement. And as a result, America has never recovered. I don't know if it ever will recover. But again, what were the mid-50s? Remember, it was only 10 years since Hitler had been defeated. And the men that you saw in the streets of New York, the men you saw in the streets of Paris, the men you saw in the streets of London in the mid-50s, I was only a kid, were the men who defeated fascism. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? These people were all powerful. They were happy to be alive. Many of them had come back from the war. They had seen death. They had faced death. They were living in a world of total freedom that they had made with their own hands, and their friends were left behind in the dirt. And so it was a beautiful world. It was a free world. It was a world of total and absolute tolerance and freedom that was taken advantage of by the vermin on the left who put a heart through America. As we are facing today, by the way, our very freedoms are being abused by radical fascists of many stripes, incidentally, primarily of the Islamofascist variety, who are coming into this beautiful country. And I'm not saying all Islamics are. You know that, and I know that. But you know darn well what I'm talking about. You take a look at what's going on in England. You understand what's going on in France. You know what's going on in Germany. You know what's going on in Belgium and Sweden and Norway. And so do the people. The only people who are not saying it like it is, are the same exact leadership types that we have leading in this country today who have their head in the sand or actually know what's going on and won't tell us that they know what's going on. But they know what's going on. And there's only a certain amount of denial that the people can take. And of course, the counter effect, the counter stroke, is occurring across Europe. The right wing is on the rise across Europe. It's the only thing that can save Europe itself from the scourge of Islamic fascism is the right wing. The left certainly is engaging it. The left is embracing it. The left is working hand in glove with it. It's only the right wing that will save Europe from a complete and total implosion. And it's the same in America. And that's why you should not be discouraged by the government. You shouldn't be discouraged by the aging sea lions who have no tusks whatsoever on the media, who are telling you to tone it down, shut up, dummy up, put your head, don't say this, don't say that, look the other way. No, don't. I would say speak out more, not speak out less. I would say don't be intimidated. And I would say don't let the left wing browbeat you, intimidate you with lies as a result of the Arizona shooting. I would go a step further. And say this to you. Do you notice that Congress had to delay a vote on repealing Obamacare today because of the Arizona shooting? Now, I want to ask you something. The left, the mad dog leftists who have an axe to grind and an agenda, obviously, we all have an agenda, are using this tragedy of a madman to conduct social policy, which is the worst form of demagoguery there is. The radical left in the government media complex is using the Arizona tragedy as an excuse to stop the course of history, which wants to turn back what the Leninist Marxist administration did to us in the last 2 years. In other words, they want to use the tragedy of Arizona for political purposes, which is amazing to me. In other words, they want an Arizona madman homicidal maniac to dictate social policy, or worse yet, they want to use him to advance their own social engineering. And they want to stop you from having your say at the ballot box. They want you to stop your newly elected representatives from representing you. The radical left would have the new Congress from fighting what they did to us in the old Congress. In other words, they want to stop Congress itself. In other words, the radical left would want wishes to stop democracy itself. They want the entire process of democracy itself stopped as a result of the Arizona shooting. So as I say to you, my job is to help you clarify what you see going on and you haven't been able to put together, number one, and to encourage you not to speak less but to speak more, and to speak more and more clearly and more forcefully. You don't have to hate to beat the left. They are hateful enough. As we saw with those creeps in the media, what they've done, as we saw what the Secretary of State did, you don't have to fall down to their level to win.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. Lift
all right,
let's up.
Stop right there. I mean, you know, the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. What a selection for Secretary Napolitano to choose, Isaiah 40. Here is a woman who runs the TSA that certainly reveals all flesh at the airports. But aside from this mild observation, we can move on, frankly. And what I'd like to move on the Savage Nation right now is the preposterous nature of the repeal of Obamacare. Let me explain what I mean by that. Headline, House set to vote on health care repeal. And there's a picture of the gobbler on the left. That would be, I don't know who, the gobbler, Mitch McConnell, John Boehner. There he is, McCain, the ever-present McCain, and Senate Republican Whip John Kyle. And they gather in front of health care reform, blah, 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 start of a health reform summit, blah, 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 blah. The fact of the matter is they're going to vote on repealing it next week, right? Why do this? It's only going to be an embarrassment. It's going to further dishearten the American conservative movement. To me, they shouldn't even bother. Now, let me explain why. In my book, Trickle Up Poverty, I explain the dangers of Obamacare. It's a job killer. It's a business killer. It's unaffordable. No one can afford it. Businesses are going broke from it. Okay? What do you mean they're going to repeal it? What they're going to do is they're going to do a sham show trial of repeal. Why? Congress is going to go back to work next week. No doubt it will. The repeal will pass in the House. I'm not even sure of that, by the way, because I think there's going to be a couple of members of the Republican coalition who are going to jump ship, incidentally. But let's say it passes the House, just for discussion's sake. What happens next? It goes to the Senate, where the Democrats still control the Senate, and the Senate rejects the repeal of Obamacare, and even if it passed the Senate, Obama would veto it. So the case is closed. You know, there's a saying, never get into a fight you can't win. In other words, if you know you're going to lose a fight, you don't get into that fight. You walk away from it. What is the point of this? I have no idea what the point of it is. It's absurd. There's only one way to defeat Obamacare, as I carefully and meticulously explained and strategized in Trickle Up Poverty. Every doctor in America should see that chapter. Repeal Obamacare is one of my principal goals. Congress can't do it. The courts can do it. And it can be done the same way that the Schechter brothers fought FDR during World War II and beat him. Four little chicken salesmen in New York, kosher chicken guys, sued the federal government after going to jail because they wouldn't comply with one of FDR's rules, and they beat him in court. And that's the way this can be defeated, is in court. This is just window dressing. You know, currently more than half of all states are suing the federal government, saying that the federal government overreached. Overreached. Multi-state lawsuit led by Florida saying the reforms are an overreach of federal power, by the way they are. And right now more, half of all states are suing the government, and the U.S. government is appealing a recent decision by a federal judge that the law's requirement that all individuals have health insurance or pay a fine is unconstitutional, which it is. It has to be won in the courts. It has to go to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has to find in favor of the people. Bing. End of story. But for the House to vote on it, we're going to come out feeling beaten up. You understand what this is? It's just a show trial along the order of what we saw in other governments. 1-800-449-8255. Now, if you want to talk about the Tucson shooting a little further, I suppose we can do that. If you want to talk about Sylvia, Salvia, or Saliva, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I personally am not on Salvia. I am not on Sylvia, and my saliva is under control, incidentally. Let's go to the callers. Ron in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Good evening, Michael. Michael, my observations are on the rally in Tucson last night. Everybody, at least many of the pundits on the left and some of the pundits that are weak, that are supposed to be on the right, have hailed it as a great speech. At best, my observations was that...
Obama's speech was great? Nothing he does is great.
Well, that's what they've stated.
What do you mean great? What was great about it?
It was nothing great about it.
The only thing great was that he didn't turn it into overt politics, and I give him credit for that. Where was the greatness?
There was none. It was mediocre at best. And the environment in which it was held and conducted looked
terrible.
More like a college
terrible. Football. Terrible. It was like a high school basketball game.
The way it was.
I'll tell you the worst part of it for me, and I turned it off, is when Mr. and Mrs. Obama were there, and they were smiling at the crowd as the crowd was cheering them. I thought it was so inappropriate and they were out of touch with the reality of the moment. And then when that Yaqui tribal leader, Dr. Carlos Gonzalez, got up there and started talking about himself, did you find that inappropriate as I did?
He told us his life history, and it had no correlation to the events that brought that rally about in the first place. So I have no idea.
No, what was he talking about? Why was he even there?
That's a very good question. The question is, why aren't these questions being raised the next day instead of everybody hailing this as a very, very great...
Well, I always raised the questions in the first hour. Did you hear me play a little bit of Gonzalez? Play it now. I'll show you what we're talking about. Go ahead.
Welcome. Let me start in the traditional way by introducing myself. I am Carlos Gonzalez.
All right, let's stop right here. I don't want to ridicule the guy. He was scared. You could hear his voice. Probably a nice family doctor, and they shouldn't have chosen him. He went off the beam here. But why ridicule a guy? He might be a decent man. But you could hear the voice was quavering. You know, it's a pretty big game to play, and you don't get into that arena as a gladiator, unless you're ready to handle the sword, man. And a lot of people don't know what that's like, getting in front of a crowd with cameras and this and that. It's a rough gig. It's a rough one. Robert Gates at Great Wall of China on nuclear strategy with China and his productive visit. What's productive? What did Robert Gates achieve? He was humiliated by the Chinese military, who mocked him, mocked America, and laughed at him by introducing a stealth jet that apparently can fly rings around our best airplane. So now listen to Robert Gates, the worst defense secretary since McNamara, in clip 28.
I think that the discussions were very productive and set the stage for taking the military-to-military relationship to the next level.
You know what?
Had a good visit to the 2nd Artillery Corps this morning.
Wow.
I invited General Jing to visit Stratcom, and
wow.
he has accepted. And I think
That's
this
nice.
Is part of the step-by-step process.
He went to visit an artillery corps, and we'll take him inside a nuclear submarine when the Chinese come here with their cameras. I love this. They love reciprocity, the Chinese. You visit ours, and we'll visit yours. That's like when you were a kid in the first grade under the stairs in PS-48, you know, where you say, you show me yours, and I'll show you mine. And then the other party shows you theirs, and you run up the steps fully clothed. That's the equivalent of what Robert Gates just got out of China. You hear? They let him see an artillery corps. Here's how our cannons work, moron. Oh, wow, that's wild. And when we come to America, please take us down below in your nuclear submarines so we can take pictures of every wall in the submarine. Listen to clip 29. It gets worse.
There was a discussion of nuclear strategy and their overall approach to conflict. We talked about their no first use policy.
Yeah,
we talked
right.
about command and control. So
sure.
I felt like it was a pretty wide ranging conversation,
mm-hmm,
pretty open.
Mm-hmm.
What came across to me is that
all right,
both.
Well, let's go to clip 30. Let's listen to this one if we can.
Are there those who have issues with it? Possibly, but
right,
I certainly
well,
didn't meet.
In
them
other
on
words, that. The fact of the matter is, China's on the rise. We're on the demise. And we have the worst possible administration in history at this moment. Instead of having a militaristic militaristic leadership, we have a pacifist leadership that will get us all whacked and turn us into slaves. That's what we fear. That is what most Americans fear who understand the dangers of China, the dangers of Venezuela, the dangers of the enemy within. That's what we fear. Listen to clip 31.
Do you think it's wise, though, to keep China in mind as a potential competitor of the United States on a military level?
Let's stop right there. There's the baggy-eyed Bolshevik, the set piece, Jim Lehrer, the baggy-eyed Bolshevik, a fellow traveler of the worst kind of PBS. He's there with Gates, and he's actually challenging the defense secretary and saying, listen to what he said. Do you think it's wise to keep China in mind as a potential competitor on a military level? In other words, no, Jim. Look the other way. There are friends. There are friends, Jim. And your lifetime goal will be achieved. We will become disarmed in your lifetime, and we will become serfs on the world stage. So let's play that again, 31.
Do you think it's wise, though, to keep China in mind as a potential competitor of the United States on a military level?
Well, we obviously have to be mindful of the, and I referred to it a minute ago, of the Chinese military modernization programs.
They're it's huge,
anti-ship, isn't it? Anti-ship cruise and ballistic missiles that potentially can put our aircraft carriers at risk. new fifth-generation aircraft, there's been some news stories about that.
Well, at least Defense Secretary Gates stood up to the baggy-eyed Bolshevik fellow traveler fifth columnist Jim Lehrer on that one. And so, ladies and gentlemen, this is, to me, the biggest issue. This is bigger than any other issue, because if we lose our freedom, what's the point of anything else? That's what worries me. China's a communist dictatorship. Make no mistake about it. Make no mistake about it. There is still a communist dictatorship. And if you don't know that, you don't know anything. So what would you like to talk about? Healthcare, Tucson, Beijing, baggy-eyed Bolsheviks, Salvia, Sylvia, or Saliva? All is possible right here on the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Looking for ways to be constructive, to be more open, to better understand what each other's intentions are with some of these capabilities. This is the way that that sovereign nations deal with each other.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood. It's a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be
mine?
So
there's Secretary of Defense Gates looking for ways to be constructive with the People's Republic of China. And I'm playing Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood afterwards, because that's about what it sounds like to me. I'm not saying he should go there and flex his muscles and rattle sabers. But, you know, this kind of talk is very dangerous when you have a militaristic China that's on the rise, developing weapons that can wipe us off the planet while we're sitting here like dunces, cutting the military at every level under Obama, the anti-military, worldwide internationalist, socialist, Leninist. And so, ladies and gentlemen, you want me to stop saying what I know to be true? I can't do it. I would rather not do talk radio than just get up here and mouth platitudes that are meaningless. This is not a time for meaningless platitudes. This is a time for meaningful dialogue. And by the way, it's a time for everyone in the country to come to understand that we're living in a very dangerous world. It is not Mr. Rogers' neighborhood out there. It is a very dangerous neighborhood that we live in. And we do have a very powerful military. Perhaps it is still the most powerful military on earth. But as you well know, our military is only as good as its commander-in-chief. And I really must pause right there. Because the concept of Obama as commander-in-chief is not only laughable, it's pathetic, as far as I am concerned. I have absolutely no faith in him as a commander-in-chief for a number of reasons. Number one, we don't know what his college transcripts say about his time at Occidental or at Columbia. We have no idea where he stands on the issue of the military, other than he's a lifetime pacifist, a lifetime anti-militarist, and so therefore, how can you call him a commander-in-chief? The man is the equivalent, at best, of Neville Chamberlain. Let's be benign about it, and let us be kind of decent about it. Let's say he's like Neville Chamberlain. He doesn't want violence in the world. Well, we can all agree on that. None of us want violence. None of us want war. None of us want nuclear weapons used. None of us like war. War is diplomacy that has failed. But on the other hand, weakness is sure to get you killed. If you go into a very dangerous neighborhood and you have no guns, or you say, you know what, I'm never going to use my gun, you're going to wound up stripped in the street and the money taken out of your pocket. And so for Gates to go to China and act like Mr. Rogers is laughable. But even worse is for him to say that they're going to do a shared visit and that the Chinese had him to visit a second artillery corps is laughable. Why would a defense secretary need to visit an artillery unit of the Chinese military when you know when General Zhang comes here and visits STRATCOM, he's going to see a little bit more than a U.S. artillery unit. You know, I was, well, let's stop right there. I was on a USS aircraft carrier, the Stennis, a number of years ago. It was the one of the most exciting visits I've ever had in my life. But I was shocked to learn that there were members of the so-called Chinese Journalism Corps aboard that ship as well, equally treated as an American talk show host and American dignitaries. And they were running around smiling, and they were all women from China with cameras. Every passageway, I'd bump into a woman, so-called journalist, smiling, of course, taking a picture inside a passageway of our nuclear aircraft carrier, Stennis. If I went into a control room with the other visitors, there she was, click, 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 clicking away. If I was taken down into the nuclear boiler room, I don't even know if we went there, click, 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 clicking away. And now we wake up, and we find out that China's developed a missile that can sink an aircraft carrier. Am I the only one in America who realizes that weakness is the reason that we have suddenly awakened to a stealth jet that China developed that can outfly our best? Or that they've developed, if not aircraft carriers, something better because it's cheaper? And that is a missile that can sink our aircraft carriers, which were said to be unsinkable until Obama came to power? See, to me, these are the real important questions. I know that there was a tragedy in Tucson. I believe that most of America has come to understand he was apolitical, except Hillary Clinton and the aging sea lions without tusks on certain left-wing channels. But most of America understands this guy was a lunatic, a one-off lunatic. We understand that. But why are we not discussing the bigger issues, such as the dangers we are facing from China, both economically, which we have come to understand, and now militarily, which eventually, God forbid, we will all come to understand? This goes way beyond salvia, sylvia, and saliva.
Savage.
Of course, the vermin on the left are trying to blame Walmart. Five times I heard that he got ammunition in Walmart as though Walmart wanted him to go on the shooting spree. This is how the vermin on the left operate. They use any opportunity, any tragedy, to advance their vile agenda. Tom in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, first of all, Mike, did you get that genetic test done? Or?
I haven't gotten it back yet. It was before Christmas I sent in the saliva. And I don't know whether I'm related to Sylvia yet, but we'll find out.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, I hate to say this, but I have to disagree with you and the other talk show host. I blame the American consumer, the American people, for the rise of the China. They're the ones who built China into the danger that it is today.
But how can you blame the consumer who's simply going to a store to buy a pair of sneakers? Does he know where it's made? What should he do? Was there a choice between a sneaker made in China and one made in Brooklyn?
Everybody I know knows everything is made in China, and they know the danger that China is becoming.
So what would you like the people to do, wear heirlooms from used clothing stores? I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, we'll have to buy from some other country then.
But no, they don't make anything out anywhere else, the cheap goods.
Well, there's Indonesia, there's Vietnam.
But Tom, if you want to start blaming, you could start with the politicians and lobbyists who transferred our technology to China. Sold whole factories to China. That's where the problem began. But if you want to go back even further, you've got to go to the World Trade Organization. We all argued against that when it was coming up. There's no point in fighting over it again. You know, there's enough blame to go around with regard to the rise of China. Of course, they took their advantage of us economically to build up their military. It's almost a natural progression. The question is, Tom, what do we do now that China's rolling in cash? We're the poor man of the nations. We have a dumbed-down electorate, a drugged-up electorate, and they're raring to go, and we're falling asleep. The government's putting the people to sleep here, and the government's waking them up there. Now, what do you do now?
Well, we have to demand our politicians tell the businessmen they have to move the factory somewhere else. We'll have to start boycotting.
Well, good luck. Yeah, demand. You think that there's a government that's going to demand anything of a businessman who put him in office? Tom,
well,
there is no simple solution. If there was, it would be done. Houston, AJ, we got Tennessee Steve, we got Dallas Pete, we got Carol in Virginia. Okay? Any of these topics are fair. I want to tell you about a subject here that's important to you. Stop using acetaminophen. FDA orders lower doses in prescription painkillers. Do you use Vicodin? Do you use Percocet? You use other prescription painkillers? Well, watch out, because they are being linked to thousands of cases of liver damage each year. Maybe you know this and maybe you don't. This is very intriguing to me. The FDA said today it will cap the amount of acetaminophen in these painkillers, Vicodin and Percocet, at 325 milligrams per capsule. Did you know that there are current products in the market that contain up to 700 milligrams of acetaminophen now? Do you know it's found in Tylenol and NyQuil, and many of you take it all day long because the ads have brainwashed you into thinking that you should take twice a day, two capsules, four times a day. Oh, I got a pain in my back. Take another two. Oh, I got a headache. Take another two. Oh, my kid yelled at me. Take another three. Oh, I saw something in the news I don't like. Take another two. And you wind up with a liver that's dead, and you need a liver transplant. Now, what's interesting to me is that the government says they're going to limit a certain ingredient in prescription painkillers. That's the headline from the Associated Press. They would lead you to believe that the painkiller itself that is found in Vicodin or Percocet is what they were limiting, right? No, you're wrong, because they're limiting the acetaminophen, which is the painkiller that is over the counter, by the way. You follow what I'm saying? In other words, the actual drug, if you want to separate them out that way, is not as dangerous as the painkiller is in acetaminophen. Did you know that? In other words, the drug element that is found in these drugs is not as deadly as acetaminophen when it comes to killing your liver. And many of you don't know that acetaminophen is the leading cause of liver failure in the United States and sends 56,000 people to the ER room annually, and about 200 of them die. And it's estimated that 120 of these deaths are linked to the prescription drugs with acetaminophen. Did you know any of this? So in other words, Vicodin combines acetaminophen with hydrocodone, while Percocet contains oxycodone, right? It's the hydrocodone and the oxycodone that are actually safer than acetaminophen. That's the strange part here. Well, that's a complicated story for you to know. All you should know is that you got to stop using these painkillers as often as you are, because you're going to wind up with liver failure. How many times have you seen the stories of people with liver and kidney failure in this country who go to the hospital and there's no match for them and there's no liver and there's no kidney to transplant? Why is there suddenly an epidemic of the need for liver and kidney transplants in America? It's because of the overusage of drugs in general, the overusage of acetaminophen in particular, by the way. I myself use aspirin on a semi-regular basis. I use the low dose every other night, as most men over 50 do, by the way. Aspirin is a far safer drug. I haven't any idea why people use acetaminophen at all. I think it's a dangerous drug and should be outlawed for most usages, by the way. I realize this is going to step on the toes again of the pharmaceutical industry, and I realize that their PR flax can easily attack me and go to the, what, they're going to go to the government and say talk show hosts shouldn't talk about drugs because they don't know anything about it? I may know more about it than they do. I may know more about it than doctors do. Maybe they'll outlaw the discussion of vitamins instead of drugs. Or maybe I, you know, maybe, what's next, by the way? Kansas City, Leroy, welcome to the Savage Nation topic. What's on your mind?
Hey, Dr. Savage, I really appreciate you taking my call. I've have admired you for many years, sir.
And I thank you. That's very nice. It's the middle of America that loves me the most, and I really do appreciate it. I know who I'm talking to here. The real heart and soul of America. The corn belt, not the porn belt. Go ahead, Leroy. What's on your mind?
Well, the one main thing that we have in common is one thing, the San Francisco Bay Area. Sir, I was stationed there for 10 and a half years and enjoyed the United States Navy.
Right.
I was on board at USS Carl Vinson, USS Enterprise, and USS Abraham Lincoln, sir.
Beautiful ships. God bless you for your service. And what did you notice?
Jesus, remember you from KSFO and KGO back in the day.
Oh, man, you go back a long way.
Yes, sir. That's why I told my wife, even though we're in the Midwest, I don't get you until 9 p.m. Central Standard. I get to listen to you on the Internet. Sir, we have been giving away this technology, and that's what made me lead the Navy after 10 and a half years. We've been giving this out ever since Bill Clinton. Unfortunately, our country has been compromised. I took the buyout. Bill Clinton bought me out.
Leroy, explain what you mean by compromised. I mean, you're a guy, you were a sailor on ships. Tell me what you saw.
Well, what we saw was something that will blow your mind. Well, you have the Chinese media, which you know they are nothing but spies.
Yes.
In every space that the average Navy sailor without a clearance can go.
Like, in other words, exactly what I'm talking about on the show when I was on the Stennis. There they were with the smiling Chinese girls from China claiming they were journalists, taking pictures of every companionway, and every inch of that ship was photographed.
Now, Dr. Savage, there was an admiral back in 1994 who was at that time the commander of the Pacific Fleet. He was forced to retire because he wrote a report talking about the Chinese in 1994, saying that by 2010, and he was off by a few years, that the Chinese will control the Pacific.
Oh, my God. And what, Bill Clinton fired him for that?
Oh, yes, and he got canned for it. I just refuse. He was a great man. I served under him.
Oh, my God. It gets worse by the day. I mean, really, when you look at these things, Leroy, you wonder if we are actually past the point of no return.
Michael, I think we're at the point at this time, man, where I don't think the end of American civilization is going to end in 30, 40 years. However, we will no longer be the dominant force.
Yes, but isn't that what the left has always wanted? You know, if you go back to the 1950s, I've studied this, Leroy, some of the spies, the atomic spies like the Rosenbergs, and even, I am thinking of one of the great atomic minds, the one who cried about, one of the great geniuses of the atomic period, who turned out to be a sympathizer with the Soviet Union. They didn't want the Soviet Union to defeat us, Leroy. They didn't want that. You know what they wanted? They wanted an equality with the Soviet Union, thinking wrongly that if all of the governments were equal, there would be no nuclear war, Leroy. So many of these left-wingers like Bill Clinton at the time, and I don't know what his politics are today, incidentally, Leroy. I think they must have changed drastically since he's become a private citizen and enjoyed some of the fruits of capitalism. Leroy, many of them are not traitors in the way that you are implying. Many of them are Fabian socialists who believed that if we were no longer the dominant military power, and that, for example, the Soviet Union was equal to us, or the China, that China was on parity with us, there would be less likelihood for a war because it would equal itself out. You follow what I'm saying?
Yes, Michael.
Leroy, here's the problem. Here's the problem with their Fabian socialism. They are assuming that these totalitarian dictatorships are well-intentioned. They are assuming that they are guided by the same principles as is this Judeo-Christian nation of ours, Leroy. And you and I both know that is not true.
You're correct, sir. You're correct.
They are not guided by the Judeo-Christian tenets. They are guided by the tenets of Karl Marx, which is that of world dominance, Leroy. Leroy, since you are kind enough to listen to me every night in the middle of America and you know so much, please allow me to send you a little gift for the new year. Trickle-up poverty will be on its way momentarily, I think as of tomorrow, by the way. Let's go to New York City, WOR. John, what's on your mind? Fire away.
Dr. Savage, it's a pleasure. And,
thank you.
I'm from the Porn Belt. I'm from New York, but I'm going to back up. I thought Leroy was going to steal my thunder because, and I know you remember this, the gentleman's name, he was the head of the Commerce Department. His name was Brown. He was killed on an airplane.
Oh, yes. Yes, Secretary of Commerce Brown. Yes, tell us the connection.
Right. The connection was that when the Clintons, who are the root of all evil in this country, they're the ones who took 6 supercomputers and sold them to the Chinese under the auspices of the Department of Commerce. And those supercomputers used to be under the Department of Defense. Clinton changed it, put his buddy Brown in charge, sold them to the Chinese. And those supercomputers, they can guide a missile right through your window, right through my window.
So they took technology, the supercomputer that was developed through the Defense Department, and transferred it to the Commerce Department and then sold them to China.
That's right. And when the General Accounting Office did an audit on where those 6 supercomputers were, China could only account for 2 of them.
Well, you want to go back? How about Bernard Schwartz of Loral Space and Technology? Do you remember that scandal under Clinton?
Yes, I do. They're the root of all evil.
Well, I don't know about the root of all evil, nor do I know what their intentions were, but I believe that what you said is 100% true, truthfully 100% true. And I wonder if Mr. and Mrs. Clinton regret having been so accommodating at that time. I really wonder. You know, in light of what Hillary Clinton has just done, I don't think she's changed at all. For a long while, I have to tell you, I got the impression that Hillary would have been a better president than Obama. For a long while, I started to think what a mistake he was. How come she didn't win? She would have been more centrist and more moderate. But after what Hillary Clinton did the other day, I will tell you she's actually more extreme than Obama. And I'll tell you why. Listen to this.
When you cross the line from expressing opinions that are of conflicting differences in our political environment into taking action that's violent action, that's a hallmark of extremism, whether it comes from the right, the left, from Al-Qaeda, from anarchists, whoever it is.
So there she is. She said this on CNN, and on the face of it, it sounds reasonable, right? But what she means is this. A maniac with a gun is the same as the 9/11 terrorists. A maniac with a gun in Arizona is now the moral and homicidal equivalent as a global network inspired by Islamic religious fascists. That is dangerous talk. That is nutty talk. And frankly, for her to say that a member of our Congress was just shot by an extremist in our country is not only irresponsible, it is not based in fact, and Mrs. Clinton should apologize and retract this statement immediately. This type of statement was not issued after the Fort Hood massacre, and as Ronald Reagan stated, it's time to restore the American precept that each individual is accountable for his actions, and this holds true for this lunatic in Arizona. I'll be right back. Well, we're moving on from Tucson to Beijing, and the pacifism of our military's leaders and also the absurdity of sharing our technology where they show us an artillery battery and we show them the guts of a nuclear submarine. It's all crazy talk. You talk about an imbalanced administration. I've never seen anything quite like this since the Clintons, by the way. Eric in New York on WOR, you have a strong opinion on this. Go ahead, please. It's brilliant.
Yeah, Michael, it makes sense to me why the military would share the military-industrial complex would share their information with the enemy. I mean, how else are they going to keep getting those huge appropriations every year?
In other words, when we woke up to the fact that the Chinese developed a stealth fighter that was better than our best, suddenly they can go and say to Congress, see that? We need more money for the F-35 or whatever?
That's it.
So, in other words, it's like firemen starting fires in order to justify a budget for more firemen?
Except, in this case, I guess the analogy would apply because people would be in danger if those wackos over there would actually use that military stuff. But other than that, yeah.
That's a pretty incredible insight, Eric, and I wouldn't doubt that there isn't some of that operational. Of course, how in the world could we even know if that's their thinking? It makes sense from an economic point of view. Which is what? Give them just enough to scare the American public into demanding more money for the military-industrial spending complex?
Yeah. I mean, wasn't Eisenhower who said that?
Yes. Oh, we have the speech, and I was the first to replay it over and over again. And of course there is a military-industrial complex, but we have to be very careful that we don't let the pacifists like Obama use the speech by Eisenhower to kill our military altogether, Eric.
You know what I think, Michael? I don't think that Obama has any kind of influence over the military. I mean, he's the president, of course.
Right.
But these guys are so entrenched in what they're doing. They are so well situated.
You think that they're running on their own steam at this point, and there's almost no input whatsoever?
Yes, that group. They've got their own thing going. That's what I think, anyway.
Well, it's one man's opinion, Eric. It's a brilliant insight, and I thank you for that. Listen to Dwight D. Eisenhower, a brilliant president.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
Well, there was the man who led the invasion of Normandy. He was the Supreme Allied Commander, so I would think that he knew from the inside what he was talking about. Now, before this hour concludes, we must play the Tucson madman's friend, Zach Osler, in his discussion about the use of salvia, a very dangerous herb from Mexico that the mad shooter was using. Listen to clip 22.
Osler began to see a change in Loeffner after a former girlfriend broke up with him. He says Loeffner became increasingly angry, started abusing alcohol and drugs, including a legal hallucinogen called salvia.
He would say he was using it, and he would talk about it and say, like, what it would do to him. And I would, like, be, dude, that's screwed up.
Yep. Well, it's a very dangerous drug. Don't let your children and the establishmentarians tell you otherwise. Salvia completely disassociates the body from the mind and puts your child into another state. And in many cases, they can never come back from that state of that hallucinogenic state. So we have a lot to talk about. We're not going to stop talking until it becomes totally illegal to be an American. And I doubt very much that even the radical leftists who have been after talk radio because of the immense power and influence that we have will succeed. I think the American people demand to know both sides of every argument, even if they disagree with us. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Thank you. We're still talking about the Arizona massacre by the drug-using lunatic. And we're starting to see the true ugly face of extreme liberalism. Perhaps the most shocking of all was not the media left-wingers who we would expect this from, but our Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton. Even the New York Post, I shouldn't say even, I would say the New York Post, wrote an editorial, which I must read you. And it says, quit digging, Madam Secretary. Hillary Clinton started her week on a shameful note, terming crazed Arizona shooter Jared Loughner an American extremist of a sort with the 9/11 hijackers. She went back for a second helping yesterday in a chat with CNN. She said, when you cross the line from expressing opinions to violent action, that is a hallmark of extremism, whether it comes from the right, the left, from Al-Qaeda, from anarchists, whoever it is, close quote. What she means? A maniac with a gun is no different from the 9/11 terrorists. A lone nut is the same as a global network inspired by religious nihilism. It's scary that America's diplomat-in-chief could possibly really believe what she said yesterday. But since Clinton argued Loughner was, quote, motivated by his own political views, it's worth examining what Loughner was espousing online in recent months. He said, being alone for a very long time will inevitably lead you to rape. He said, I was fired from five places. Terrible situation, mental breakdown, close quote. Then he said, would you hit a handicapped child, close quote. Extreme language, to be sure, but political views, hardly. A friend of his made it clear he disliked the news, he didn't listen to political radio, he didn't take sides, he wasn't on the left, he wasn't on the right. Jared Loughner was no political extremist. For Clinton to say otherwise means she's deluded, disingenuous, or deranged herself. And this is from the New York Post. This is clearly a failure to lead. There were some letters about it as well that are worth reading, by the way. And the sorry state of Hillary Clinton's mind is evidenced by these letters. Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton's comment that a member of our Congress was just shot by an extremist in our country is irresponsible and not based in fact. Clinton must apologize and retract the statement immediately. I don't recall this kind of statement being issued after the Fort Hood massacre. As Ronald Reagan stated, it is time to restore the American precept that each individual is accountable for his actions. This holds true for this lunatic shooter in Arizona. Unbelievable. By the way, the same people who giddily chanted, kill Bush, now want to use Arizona's dead and wounded to kill a national debate that they are losing. Clinton's comments are as shameless as they're meaningless. This administration just loves to debase Americans in front of foreign audiences. Sadly for the knee-jerk left, Jared Loughner is not at the Tea Party. He is a party of one who acted alone against the object of his addled obsession. Amazing, huh? That's your Hillary Clinton for you. I saw a cartoon in the paper that I could easily describe. I'm going to frame it. It shows two muggers on a dark street. One has a nose ring. He's holding a machine gun. The other one is wearing baggy pants and wearing a jacket with a skull on it, another holding a gun. And on the ground is a dead man who they just shot, a man in a suit. His briefcase is splayed on the sidewalk, and they're picking his pocket of cash. And in the cartoon bubble above one of the cartoon figures' head, we read, if we get caught, just blame Palin and talk radio. I'm framing that one. Boy, that's a good cartoon. I don't know who did this one, but I wish I could show it to you on the Savage Nation today. Also in passing, this one really gets me angry. This is really bad. The tort lawyers in America need to be reined in. They need to be arrested. They need to be stopped. Listen to this ad. This is an ad now. Are you a firefighter, a police officer, an emergency service federal and city employee, and a volunteer, a construction or cleanup worker who worked on the 9/11 cleanup? Well, the Zagrota bill passed. It's called the James Zagrota 9/11 Health and Compensation Act of 2010. And it says, Warby, Groner, Edelman, and Napoli Byrne LLP now to evaluate your claim. You may be entitled to compensation for your injuries, wage losses, and medical bills. Even if you were in Lower Manhattan as a volunteer and you were injured as a result of the WTC attacks, contact us now to discuss your Zagrota rights. Warby, Groner, Edelman, and Appley Burn, LLP. Ladies and gentlemen, this is disgusting. These vultures should be put out of business, in my opinion. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
Reminded of Rudyard Kipling, if you can keep your head and all those around you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, then you'll be a man, my son. If you can keep your head when all those around you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, then you will be a man, my son. And I'll tell you the truth, it's worked for me for 30, 40 years now. And you know what? It's going to work for me today and yesterday and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. At the end of the day, I got to go meet my maker. You got to go meet your maker. I got to face God, and you know what? I'm going to go there with as clean a conscience as I can. And the last thing I want to do is go there saying, you know, when this tragedy occurred in Arizona, did I use it for personal gain? Did I use it to push my agenda? And I have to tell you, my conscience is clear on this issue. I wish I could say the same for Chris Matthews and for Little Joe Klein of Time Magazine or for the Pima County Sheriff Clarence Dumnick. They are the ones who really should be ashamed of themselves. But I want to focus not on saliva of the type that comes out of the side, the corners of the mouth of people on television on the left, but I want to focus again, remember, salvia, not saliva. Don't go home and say, Savage said saliva did it. Whatever you do, don't take the take-home message that Michael Savage blamed it on saliva. I'm not blaming it on salvia. I'm giving it to you as an example of one of the drugs that this kid was using. It's a hallucinogenic mint from Mexico that has been used for hundreds of years by so-called shamans, so-called shamanistic ceremonies led by spiritual healers in Mexico. You know, well, maybe it works in a ceremony in Mexico. Remember, I have a degree in ethnobotany, so I don't say that with contempt. But what may work in a ceremony in Mexico or may have worked in a ceremony in Mexico 100 years ago or even today does not mean it's safe for Junior to use if you follow the drift. Salvia is banned in 15 states. It should be regulated, in my opinion, as a Schedule I drug like heroin and ecstasy. It is a very dangerous hallucinogenic drug. And you must understand that the people who have used it are reporting the total detachment from reality. The effects are more powerful than LSD and mushrooms. And yet, of course, many people don't realize that because it's natural, it can be harmful. 1-800-449-8255. Time is just speeding along because when you can use your brain and when you can use your background as I am using it tonight, it makes time go by very rapidly. In that sense, the most intoxicating substance on earth is the truth. I don't know whoever said that, but maybe you ought to hear it a little more often. Truth is perhaps the most intoxicating of all medications. Truth will cure anxiety. Truth will cure depression. Truth will improve mood. Truth will increase insight like no pharmaceutical or hallucinogen ever invented. This is all being lost by the hysterical leftists who are blaming Michael Savage and others, including wonderful congressmen who were elected recently as part of the Tea Party surge, such as Representative Alan West, one of my favorite congressmen in America. The best of today is yet to come. In the waning minutes of this hour of the Savage Nation, you're about to hear something that should put chills up the back of your neck. Last week, the congresswoman, Representative Gabrielle Giffords, who was shot in the brain by this lunatic, was there with Republicans and others reading the U.S. Constitution on the floor of the House. And guess what part of the U.S. Constitution this brave representative happened to have read? Listen now.
The First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
Now, if I had a greater capacity for drawing together all of the elements of what I've been trying to get at over the last few days, I would do so, but I cannot. I am literally speechless from what I just played for you. Here is a Democrat congresswoman who was shot in the head by a lunatic who did not watch TV, who didn't listen to political radio, who last week chose to read this, the First Amendment, to the Bill of Rights. That is what she read. Play it again. This is the woman who's laying in a hospital, fighting for her life, hovering between life and death, hanging on by a thread. We're all praying for her. And listen to what this woman read last week on the floor of the House.
The First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances.
I rest my case, ladies and gentlemen. I rest my case, and I ask you whether you feel the lynch mob on the left is right in blaming those of us on the other side of the aisle, and we should not have a discussion anymore about these issues. You know that she herself would disagree with that allegation. She herself understood that the mark of a democracy, a vigorous democracy, is vigorous debate. She herself chose to read the First Amendment to the Bill of Rights. She didn't choose the 10th Amendment or the 11th, or the 9th or the 8th or the 7th or the 6th or the 5th or the 4th or the 3rd. She didn't even read the Second Amendment, even though she herself was a gun owner. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I think that those are wonderful words to remember. Please take home the proper message tonight. The lunatic, evil shooter did not watch TV. He didn't listen to political radio. He didn't listen to conservative radio. And the vermin on the left, who are following Rahm Emanuel's playbook when he said, never let a crisis go to waste, not only owe me an apology, they owe America an apology for trying to capitalize on this tragedy. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to Albany, New York. Robert, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael Savage, it's nice to talk to you. I've been a longtime listener since I was about the age 13 with my father. Unfortunately, this is the first time I've ever actually disagreed with you. Marijuana absolutely would not cause anybody to ever harm someone. That is definitely a fact.
Wait, when you say it's definitely a fact, what's your evidence?
It's just, there's zero deaths that are caused in America by marijuana.
Wait a minute, you just said it's definitely a fact. It's a fact proven by what evidence?
By marijuana. How could you possibly ban...
Wait a minute, marijuana is an individual who has assembled facts about itself?
Excuse me?
You know what I just said. You said it's definitely a fact that marijuana has never induced violence in anyone.
That is correct.
Well, you're wrong. You don't know history, Robert. You know nothing about the history of the word itself.
Explain to me how it has caused violence in America.
Well, let me go back and give you a little history about hashish. Will that help you?
Yeah, I would really be interested.
All right. We're going to have a rational conversation as though I'm a professor and you're a student, without any rancor, without any derision.
Yep.
How were you raised, by the way, Robert? Strict or in a liberal manner? Strictly or in a liberal manner?
I was raised in a conservative family, very military-based.
Did your father approve of you becoming a pothead?
I'm not a pothead, sir. I'm a past user. I'm 19 years old now. Back in my younger teen days, I did use marijuana.
Well, of course. I'm not saying it's a moral defect. Don't get me wrong. It's a medical danger is what I'm saying. I didn't say it's a moral defect. I don't really have a big thing about people's actions other than hurting others or hurting children. I'm a sexual libertarian, and so I don't think there's any moral deficit about smoking pot. To me, it's a medical thing that I'm talking about. Well, let me give you some facts that most people don't know, and I'm going to read it to you. The assassins comes from the Arabic, hashashin or hashishin, okay? Assassins are related to the Arabic word hashashin, and they were an order of Arabs in Syria and Persia that existed 1,000 years ago, and they posed a strong military threat to the Sunni authority within the Persian territories. And these people, the Nizari Ismailis, captured and inhabited many mountain fortresses at the time. The name assassins was originally derogatory and used by their adversaries during the Middle Ages. The modern word assassin is derived from its name. And you go down the list, right? Here it comes. The term hashish, connoting meaning such as outcast or rabble. Various Orientalist scholars believed that these individuals consumed hashish before carrying out political killings. It is well established that many acts of violence are preceded by the individual smoking marijuana. I don't know how you could say it's never happened. It's well known to be a fact. Ask any detective if it's not related to violence.
America does not have problem with violence and marijuana. Those were back in...
Wait a minute. Has no problem with it? How about what just happened in Arizona? He was a known pothead.
Yeah, he was psychologically messed up from birth, apparently. He's a serial killer. That's apparently
Now you're jumping to conclusions. You have no evidence that he's a serial killer. He went on a rampage after smoking marijuana. So therefore, you have to look at what marijuana may have done to this unstable mind.
Marijuana does not make anyone's mind unstable. It actually relaxes the mind.
You are 100%. Look, you don't have the background to even have this discussion, so it's difficult to have the discussion. If you had studied the medical literature, perhaps you could have a discussion. The medical literature supports what I'm saying. You're just making statements that are opinion. They're not facts.
Well, then why does America hand out marijuana as a medical medicine?
Because that's what I'm trying to tell you. Because they've been brainwashed by George Soros's front groups and special interests that are making a fortune with medical marijuana and the big lie of medical marijuana clinics. I have a PhD in a field. I've studied these things most of my adult life. You have not.
Savage.
Before we go back to the topics we've been talking about in the Savage Nation, I got to tell you something else just to show you the diversity and the range of this show. I was rereading Plato's Republic, which I first read in Jamaica High School, where we had a real education. Think about how far this country has fallen, that I had to read Plato's Republic in high school when I went to high school. Now you could just imagine they can't even read, and then they sue the school because there's not enough diversity, and they need more science labs for children who'll use the chemistry set to kill each other with. So here's what I found on page 96. It's a paragraph. It's not going to bore you. This is from Plato's Republic. If we adhere to our original notion and bear in mind that our guardians, meaning our politicians, setting aside every other business, are to dedicate themselves wholly to the maintenance of freedom in the state, making this their craft, they ought not to practice or imitate anything else. Did you hear what Plato wrote in the Ideal Republic? That the one and sole job that politicians are supposed to dedicate themselves to is the maintenance of freedom in the state. Now, I want to ask you, and I want you to be honest with yourself, are you going to tell me that Obama has devoted himself to maintaining freedom in the United States of America? Can you honestly say that this man has tried to engender more freedom for the average American? And I would appeal to liberals who are literate out there to understand the danger we are in. Here is a president who, since he has seized power with this regime of change, the man has appointed Marxist czars who are not even answerable to the people, let alone to Congress. The man has kowtowed to foreign dictators. He has bowed down to the king of Saudi Arabia. He has bowed down to the dictator of China. He has conducted hostile takeovers of whole industries. Remember, General Motors. He has bribed senators and congressmen and women to have them vote for this so-called insurance grab. And you're going to tell me that Obama the Magnificent meets up to what Plato wrote is the ideal politician, the ideal party, is that a guardian should set aside every other business and dedicate themselves wholly to the maintenance of freedom in the state? I stumbled upon it the other day because it's a funny thing. I was bored of everything. I couldn't watch TV anymore. I couldn't read anymore. So every time I dip back to the classics, it's as though I have gone back to an alpine brook that I know about. It's hidden somewhere way up at, 8,000 feet. And I have to climb a long way to get to it. And I dip my little Boy Scout cup into that brook. And I take a sip of this glacial water. And I remember what pure water is, despite all the filters and all of the bottles and all of the water from Fiji and here and there. None of it's pure. You have to go way up to the mountaintop, and you got to dip your cup into glacial water to know what pure water is. And it's the same with ideas and thoughts. You've got to go back to the fountainhead. And the fountainhead of all of Western civilization can be found in the ancient Greeks, in Plato, in Aristotle, and in others. And only by going back to the ancients and the classics can you understand really the game that we're involved in here and where we have fallen and where we have to struggle to get back to. I don't know how else to put it to you. And I put it to you as best as I can. In sports as in talk, really in sports as in politics, either you're safe or you're out. And right now, would you say that Obama's safe or he's out? You know he's out. Well, he thought he'd have what? He was going to go on from health care to the next destructive major league policy, which was global warming in the midst of the worst winter in 30 years. And then what? Then he was going to go on to granting amnesty to 30 million illegal aliens? No. The entire left-wing agenda has been sidelined or derailed by his overreaching and, frankly, his narcissism and his inexperience. There's no other way to put it. The people spoke. They said no more spending. Rein in your spending, number one. Number two, no more taxes. Number three, stop with your left-wing agenda. Number four, move to the center. And so what does Obama do? He moves to the left. It just shows you that he's unskilled and that he is going to be a one-term president, and the Democrats will probably lose power for the next 20 years. And this is sad in a way. It's sad. You know, you say, what? It's sad because who's going to win? You're going to have the same old corrupt old men from the Republican Party come back with all new outfits. You know, I stand for they're full of crap. I would trust a Republican as much as I would a stuck pig to not try to get away from what you think they're going to do. No, sorry, I'm not going to go for it. Don't tell me to line up behind Republicans because it's the best choice and the lesser of two evils. Never again. I didn't do it last time, and I'm not going to do it this time. Don't give me the lesser of two evils. Give me a positive instead of the lesser of two evils. We don't have much time left. That's one topic. Another topic is my engines. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go to all the way to Mississippi. Why Mississippi? Because in Mississippi, they know about certain things that you people in New York don't know about. Glenn, welcome to the show. Glenn, what are we going to talk about, you and I?
Well, I've got a 30-year experience in building steel ships for the United States Navy, and I was prepared to discuss the issue with your 62-footer.
Good, because you're an expert. So I got 2,000 horsepower cat diesels. The boat ran like a clock until this trip Saturday over to the fuel dock when she was almost empty of fuel. She was down to around 250 gallons out of 1,500, which I never should have let happen. I know that. And all of a sudden, I felt a slight vibration above 1,700 RPM. But after filling up 7,000 pounds of fuel, the vibration went away. And you think it was because why?
It has all to do with the actual shape of the hull versus the amount of weight you put in it. And the third reason would definitely be that you sank the hull lower in the water. Every ship has an immersion rate, and you've put so many thousand pounds on there, and it sinks a certain amount. And this will drive the props deeper. When we go out and test the ships for the United States Navy, we have to be in at a certain draft on the ship, or the props are not efficient. The other reason is that the harmonics, that being the running speed of the propellers, port versus starboard, set up a given harmonics. Every ship has harmonics dealing with the props, which is a millihertz that they deal with. If you sync them up, they run perfectly. If they get out of sync, you will feel vibration. In your case, with just dealing with a 62-footer, it's probably in the fact that you let the fuel run too far out. We have compensation systems on ships that sail the seas, which means we take on water while we're running the fuel out.
So when the fuel runs out on a Navy ship, you're taking on seawater for ballast. That's very interesting.
Yes, sir. What we do is the fuel floats, of course, in the tanks, but we keep the props low in the water so they'll take a large bite of heavier or concentrated water.
Isn't that interesting? You see, you know, Glenn, first of all, I am so thankful that you are an expert in the subject, because my intuition told me, without knowing exactly why, that the weight of the fuel is the reason that the slight vibration went away. And I just figured it out on pure instinct, and now I think you're confirming that. Glenn, what kind of ships do you still build in Mississippi for the U.S. Navy, just as a side note?
Well, the ones that have made the recent headlines, the LPDs, the LHAs are 884 feet long. They come in at a displacement weight of 54,000 tons.
But what are they? What kind of boat are they? What do they do?
They're amphibious assault ships. And
oh, I was on one of those. So they look like a mini aircraft carrier with a flat top for helicopters?
Yes, sir. They're
amazing. And they have a hospital that can take up to 800 men on it. I've been on those. They're amazing during the Navy League events. I've gone aboard them. They're really awesome. They can put an entire, battalion of Marines ashore?
3,000 Marines.
That's amazing. No, it's amazing. And the hospital aboard these ships is something to behold, too. So you guys build them in Mississippi? Wow, what a great thing to be doing for the country.
Well, I gave it my best in Vietnam, came back and decided I had to give something a little bit more for this country's defense.
You know, and this is something that smart Alex in big cities don't know goes on outside of New York City. They think the whole world spins around Wall Street. Little do they know that you can't fight a war with the paper dollars.
One thing, Dr. Savage, keep your tanks at least 50% and up because you...
Oh, I've learned my lesson. Glenn, even with my cars, since the time I'm a kid, common sense said don't let it get down to reserve. Because even with a car, you're going to suck up the impurities from the bottom of a fuel tank on top of it all, correct?
Well, that's true. But with diesel, a lot of people don't know this. There's a algae that forms in diesel fuel, and the less air you keep in a tank, the less algae you'll actually form. So,
well, we put a conditioner into the fill line on the way in. Is that what it kills?
Yes, sir. It kills that algae, so it doesn't clog your injectors up, and it will.
Well, I was shocked that I was down. I needed 1,165 gallons when I filled it yesterday. Quite a nice bill. Cost me a little bit more than the clam chowder soup.
Yes, sir.
Well, I'll be right back. Savage. Everything's good. We live in paradise. I mean, the truth is, America is a paradise. It's the greatest country on earth. There's certain things that tell me it's still a great nation. This fraud from Chicago or this fraud from Hawaii, wherever the hell he's from, cannot do this anymore. But he's not the smart politician that he's led you to believe he is. If he was smart, he would follow the pattern of Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton also had a great arrival on the scene from nowhere. But Bill Clinton, at midterm elections, saw that his party was going to go up in smoke if he kept ruling to the left. And Bill Clinton was wise in that way. He moved to the center. You can't say the same for the Chicago School of Politics. They're moving to the left. They're listening to the shrill zombies on MSNBC and the few websites that put them in power, and they think that that's going to help them. It's not going to help them. The country spoke, and they said, we don't want to become like Eastern Europe was under the Soviet Union. We do not want to become like Italy is today. We don't want to mimic France. We don't want to mimic Germany. We really love America. And you know what makes America great? It's the small business person that makes America great, not government. And again, I have to reiterate what I found over the weekend. And I'm not going to go quote it again because I put the book away. I can't even find it. Oh, there it is, Plato's Republic. As I said, I'm not trying to show you how smart I am because I read it in high school. I didn't read it in college. So I'm not trying to show you, again. I know the overlearned stuff can get to you. I get it. But I read Plato's Republic in high school. This is a city high school that I went to. Everybody was basically middle class or lower middle class or poor in Jamaica high school. I had to read Plato's Republic. I had to study language. Take a look at what they have in high schools today. Take a look at them. Never mind reading Spanish or German or French. No, they can't even speak English. And who do they blame? They blame the school. They blame the system. They blame racism. The parents who don't have a book in the house are saying, oh, how come you can't teach my child how to read? They don't have a book in the house, let alone a newspaper. So I find this book over the weekend, as I say to you. I was bored. I couldn't watch anything anymore, read. It was all crap. It's all junk. So I pick up the book I've carried around since high school. I still have the original Modern Library edition. And I find this thing on politics. It's two lines long. Listen to what Plato wrote. Bear in mind that our guardians, he means when he says our guardians, our politicians, our president, our Senate leader, our Speaker of the House, our guardians, setting aside every other business, are to dedicate themselves wholly to the maintenance of freedom in the state. Do you hear that? Maintenance of freedom in the state. Now, again, I want to appeal to you Democrats out there. Can you really argue that Obama has spent his every waking moment since he has seized power trying to advance freedom in the state in the United States of America? Are you going to tell me that by taking over General Motors, he has advanced freedom in the United States of America? By taking over AIG, has he advanced freedom in the United States of America? By kowtowing to the dictator of Saudi Arabia, has he advanced freedom in the United States of America? By going to China and getting on his hands and knees before the dictator of China, has he advanced the concept of freedom in the United States of America? By appointing one communist professor after another as a special czar who did not even have to go through any hearings or FBI background checks, has Obama shown an inclination towards advancing freedom in the states? You know that he has not. He has desired to reduce freedom in the United States of America. And the very, very, very suspicious look that he has tried to hide is suddenly emerging underneath the facade. And the American people, frankly, see through it. And I think that we're going to have a new dawn in the United States of America. And I believe that is showing everywhere. There's a new invigorated conservative movement. I see it everywhere I turn. I see a new hope in the people who hadn't voted in many elections. They've sat it out. They hated the Republicans. They hated what the Republican Party had become. They hated the rhinos. They hated McCain. And many of them, out of spite, frankly, voted for Obama. It's not that Obama was popular to begin with. Nobody wanted to elect Karl Marx Jr. Nobody said we wanted Junior Doc Duvalier in the United States of America. They figured, all right, screw the Republicans for what they've done. I'll just show them. The people are pretty, you know, independent in America, especially independents. And a lot of them did this as there's a word for it that's escaping me. There's a word for people, contrary. They wanted to be contrarian. So they elected Obama. They voted for Obama. They don't like the guy, though. After they see the czars, the takeover of one industry after another, the drunken spending, the kowtowing to Saudi Arabia, the kowtowing to China, they don't like the guy. And I believe that he's making the exact error he should be making in order to destroy the Democrat Party for the next 20 or 30 years, and that is moving to the left, listening to schmucks like MoveOn.org and MSNBC. By listening to them, he's destroying them, the Democrat Party itself. So good luck, Mr. Obama. Keep listening to the idiots. They may have elected you, but believe me, they can't save you right now. The only people who can save Obama would be the Clintons, who are much smarter than him. They knew to move to the center. Obama doesn't have that in him because he's an ideologue. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. And again, let me just go back for a minute and a few minutes to remain in this hour. I am syndicated by an independent syndicator who is not in any sense a major corporation. Maybe he will be one day. Maybe he knows them. But you see, Limbaugh and Beck are part of corporate talk. And whether you believe it or not, it doesn't really matter whether the corporate talk is left or right. There is a club. And corporate talk only talks about others within the corporate talk fraternity. And so although Michael Savage has been actually banned in Britain, although Michael Savage is actually the first victim of McCarthyism in this period, although Michael Savage is actually the first victim of such things, that didn't matter to Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh. What's important is what might happen, because the people themselves don't even see the hypocrisy. And now you understand what corporate broadcasting is as opposed to independent broadcasting. Oh, I forgot to tell you this right at the end of the show of this hour. I buy a bowl of soup, $6.95, two beers, $10, whatever. Yeah, the bill was $30. I see a tax in San Francisco, sales tax X, and then it says 4% healthcare tax, San Francisco healthcare tax. I said, what? This is how that double-talking fraud, Gavin Newsom, boasted to the nation, oh, in San Francisco, we have health care for all. Let me tell you how he did it. You know how he did it? By driving restaurants out of business. By driving businesses out of San Francisco is how this socialist moron funded his health care for illegal aliens and everybody else who wants to get a free ride. You're paying for it with every bowl of soup. Every sandwich in San Francisco has a 4% surcharge so that they can provide free health care to every illegal alien from Nicaragua, El Salvador, Mexico, China, and you name it. anybody can get free health care in San Francisco, and you're paying for it. You know how you're paying for it? By seeing one business after another suffering and closing. And it appears on the bills of only some restaurants. You know what most of the others do? They don't even show you that tax. They've just raised their prices by 4% in order to pay for this socialist machine in San Francisco. So the next time you see any Tusum Newsom getting up and lying that he has a successful plan for funding health care, you got to understand where it's coming from. It's coming out of the hides of the hardworking restaurant owners in San Francisco. That's how left-wingers work. They produce nothing and they steal from those who do. They create nothing and they take away from those who create. They don't work and they take away from those who do work. They're killing waiters. They're killing busboys. They're killing cooks. They're killing dishwashers. And they're doing it all under the guise of compassion. I have never seen anything like this liar in San Francisco, any Tusum Newsom. He did it by taxing restaurants out of business.
Savage.